it's very logical to expect such people, such cruel, such oppressors to do the same, to oppress the Ahlul Bayt of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
No such a sin have been witnessed during the history of Islam up to that time. I mean, killing the children or attacking the women and the tents on fire. Okay.
Especially it's only 50 years after the demise of the Prophet that you believe in as your prophet, because at the end of the day, you are carrying the name of Muslims. So let me share with the dear listeners some of the statements of the Muslim historians, both Shia and Sunni ones, and then we can come to this question did it lead to these holy women and children to lose their hijab or not? According to Tabari and Ibn Athir, Tabari in his At-Tariq and Ibn Athir in his Al-Kamil, people, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, attacked the women and children to loot their precious clothes and even the camels. And they also tried to take off some of the clothes of the women.
Yes.
In Ansaf al-Ashrabi, read the same. According to his account, people tried to take off the veils from the women, but Umar ibn Sa'd prevented them from doing so.
Okay.
You see how ugly is this act, that even a man like Umar ibn Sa'd is preventing his army from doing so. This is in Ansab al-Ashraf, volume 3, page
204. You mean taking off the covering and the scarves from the head of the women?
Yeah, whether it is the scarf or what is the reality of it, I will explain later. In Siyar A'lam al-Nubala, we have a very touching story. The narrator says that one of the soldiers of Umar ibn Sa'd, he tried to take the jewelries of Fatima, the daughter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and at the same time he was crying. Fatima asked for the reason. He said that I'm crying because I'm looting the property and the belongings of you, the daughter of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. Mm-hmm. Then Fatima said that, then leave it. And I mean, if you're sad for doing so, then why you're doing that? He said that if I do not do so, another man will come and will take this property. So you see the justification of this man. This is in Siyar A'lam al-Nubala by Zahabi, volume 3, page 303. And just let me share what we read in Al-Luhuf. People were exceeding each other in looting the properties of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. They took off the veils of the women, and it caused the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam to go out of the tents and to cry together. Humayd ibn Muslim, one of the narrators of the story of Karbala, he says that I saw that there was a lady from Banu Bakr bin Wa'il who was along with her husband in the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. But when she saw that people are attacking the women and looting their properties, she, this lady in the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, she took a sword to somehow support the Ahlul Bayt of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. This is in Al-Luhuf by Sayyidina Tawus, page 131. Just let me share some other sources regarding taking the earrings from the ears, which in some cases cause an injury in the ears of some girls and women. According to Maqtal al-Hussein by Khwarazmi, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, they came around the tents of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam together with Shibrim al-Dal-Jushan. He ordered the soldiers to loot the properties of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam inside the tents. So the army went into the tents and they took everything, so much so that they even took the earrings of Umm Kulthum, the sister of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and they caused injuries in her ears. And also they took off the veils of women. This is in Maqtal al-Hussein by Khwarazmi, volume 2, page 43.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Praises to Allah, all glory to Allah.
We worship Allah and no one but Allah.
Sorry, the army of Yazid and Umar al-Sa'd were Muslims, isn't it?
Yeah.
So why taking off the, for example, the veils from the head of the women at that time?
I mentioned before that they have killed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Mm-hmm. So is it possible for you to be a real Muslim and kill the grandson of your mm-hmm. prophet? No crime is more heinous than that. Okay. So even compared to what they did before, I mean, killing Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, this is nothing. But anyway, I mean, we are talking about the most cruel people in the history of Islam and such a great oppressors. So it is very natural to expect such heinous acts from these people, especially when it comes to, war's booties. You know that at that time, one of the reasons that some people were motivated to take part in the wars was to take the booties after defeating the enemy.
Yes.
So that was one of the excuses for them. They have defeated the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and now it's the time for them to take war booties. And the only booties in this case is the belongings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, because all the men except for Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, they were already martyred.
That's right.
Now, as I mentioned, there is a question of the women practicing hijab after this violation. Were they able to continue practicing hijab or not? When we pay attention to the Arabic text of these narrations, we have the following expressions. For example, جَاذَبُ النَّسَاءَ مَلَاحِفَهُنَّ عَنْ ظُهُورِهِنَّ وَرْيَنْزَعُونَ الْمَلَاحِفَ عَنْ ظُهُورِنَا يَنْتَزَعُونَ مِلْحَفَةَ الْمَرْأَةَ عَنْ ظَهْرِهَا أُرْ تُنَازَعُ ثَوْبُهَا عَلَى ظَهْرِهَا. According to some scholars, what happened by the soldiers of Umar ibn Sa'd was just taking the, the first veil over the body of the ladies and the girls.
Yes.
So on that time, it was not the case that women were covering themselves only by one veil or one scarf. No, they had another veil under that outer veil, if I put it this way. And with that, they were able to continue practicing hijab and covering their bodies. And some people believe that, as you also mentioned, they were Muslims. So if they wanted to remove the whole veil of the women, it was against the honor of the Arabs at that time. Forget about the religion of Islam. It was against their honor and, reputation to leave the women without any kind of covering and veil. So that is why, according to some scholars, when we are talking about the phrases, as I mentioned, like جَاذَبُ النَّسَاءَ مَلَاحِفَهُنَّ عَنْ ظُهُورِهِنَّ, it is just referring to the outer veil.
Yes.
And when it was removed, they had another veil which was covering their head and the body. Mm-hmm. And the same can be mentioned regarding the phrases like تُسْلَبُ الْمَرْأَةُ مِقْنَعَتُهَا مِنْ رَأْسَهَا. Beyond that مِقْنَعَ, they had another veil which was covering the whole body. So if we understand these narrations from this perspective and based on this explanation, we can come to this conclusion that although these cruel people, they attacked the tents of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they set them on fire, they looted all the properties and belongings of these innocent women and children, including their veils and jewelries and the earrings and anklets, but it didn't lead them to not to be able to practice hijab because they had another veil which was covering the whole body.
Yes.
And the second point is that imagine that this act of the army of Umar ibn Sa'd has caused the Ahlul Bayt to lose their hijab. Mm-hmm. So who should be blamed? The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam or the army of Umar ibn Sa'd? For sure, in this case, when we are talking about practicing hijab, we are talking about practicing hijab based on your free will. But if some people force you not to practice hijab, then you cannot be blamed. So imagine a lady, a Muslim lady, he's passing the street and a stranger comes and take her veil and she's not able to continue practicing hijab anymore for some minutes maybe.
Yes.
So in that case, that stranger should be blamed. She cannot be blamed for not practicing hijab because she was forced to do so. So even if we can imagine that these heinous acts of the army of Umar ibn Sa'd has caused some of the girls or some of the women not to be able to practice hijab for some moments or some minutes, it is only this army that should be blamed. Ahlul Bayt cannot be blamed at all. As we know, in all the cases, they try their utmost to, practice hijab and cover themselves.
That's right. Okay, technically speaking, according to Islamic laws, at the time of wars or in hardships, even we can say if the hijab is not observed properly, there's no problem with the women, isn't it, in the hardships? Is it so?
No. We do not have such
at
a
the time of war or something like that.
No, we have the concept of izterar, meaning that, if you do not have free will anymore, if other people force you, then you have no will to practice hijab. In that case, yes.
Yes, it's true.
You are justified.
That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. The another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fi al-jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في
Mona and her story. In this moment, having arrived in the city of Gaza once again and being amongst the devastation in the streets, I am very anxious. I have returned to locate someone who is very dear to me. Her name is Mona, and I intend to write her story.
Welcome back, Barbara. Mona lives in Beit Lahia, one of the bordering areas which received heavy shelling and bombardment. You have been before here, but this time, the scene is completely different. The destruction is massive.
I met Mona 3 wars ago, which is about 6 years back. I filmed a wedding ceremony back then for a documentary. This couple had just gotten married right when war broke out. The guests were refugees from the Jabalia camp. The joyful scene, however, ended when our camera closed in on Mona's face. Mona knows that she will never get married. No longer does she dream of a fiancé, but she does dream of a prosthesis made in France. An Israeli shell took off one of her legs on the last day of that war. It is impossible for a person in her condition to ever leave Gaza.
I'm trying to work out where she exactly lives. Because as you see, the landscape has very much changed because of the war.
A deep crater has made a wasteland out of the surrounding area. Everything looks quite different to me, but I find Mona's house still standing, and I believe she is alive. This is Saloh, Mona's father. It is he who found Mona wounded in the local school where she took shelter 6 years ago. I see that she has resigned herself to this crutch, a life on one leg at the border of an abyss dragging herself about. I am struck by the resilience of Gaza. In losing her leg, Mona has also lost the future she dreamt of. Now an amputee, she is not a suitable candidate for marriage. With no prospects for a husband or child, it is not the end of the world, but for a woman in Gaza, it is a great misfortune. Before we know it, we are in front of her uncle's house. He used to be a backhoe driver, a very useful job for digging tunnels for the defenders. I have to leave Mona. She cannot accompany me on my next journey. This school here, which has survived the war, is to be evacuated of refugees so that the students may return. The refugees are grouped in buildings like this. It's an unimaginable situation. A building prepared for 500 students, but now it contains more than 3,000 displaced persons. 60,000 people live in schools under these conditions.
We still have more displaced in our schools now than at the peak of the war in 2009. The frustration of the people is going to increase dramatically over the course of the coming weeks. We have thousands, tens of thousands of families who physically have nowhere to live. And we need to address that. Even independent of a broader political agreement, these people need to have somewhere to live.
Inside the ruins of this house, I found the young members of this family. I have an impregnable view of the life of our young people, and I tell myself that a new generation will arise out of these ruins. Is there any other life possible for them? This is what I wanted to believe for 4 years when I brought Mona to France. Mona was so thankful to be able to walk again. No longer will she suffer immobility now that she has a prosthesis. The prosthesis has ensured a better life for Mona in Gaza. I have come here about 15 times now, and the scene is always the same. The new Al-Wafa Hospital, the only rehabilitation center in Gaza. During the war between Hamas combatants and Israeli forces, the director of the original Al-Wafa Hospital protested and as a result had to evacuate all the patients before it could be bombed. The location is now here, a reform house converted into a hospital in a good district.
We used to have a special place for the medical rehab to improve the life of the person and make him able to walk. And that special place was at the hospital that the Israeli destroyed. Right now, we're trying to do the same thing, but in a corridor.
How many people are there in Gaza that are like Mona? 11,000. 11,000 injured people that need rehabilitation.
He got injured from a shot by the Israelis as he was walking in his farm. So he was shot in the back and the spinal cord, so he is paralyzed all the way down. The Israelis' actions by this, they are creating a new segment in the society that is paralyzed. They destroy the place that these people need to get treatment to improve their lives. So the Israelis, systematically, they are trying to destroy the health system in Gaza City so they can leave the people handicapped, they can leave the people unable to improve their lives and put the blockade, more blockade on them, not in the border side, but within themselves.
His eyes flicker the flames of Gaza oil. It's amazing how the strength of life propels one. For example, this man here, who was extracted alive from under the rubble. I have found Mona's father. This piece of land nourishes all of his family. Salah took me to the Mosque Al-Suchi, a tent of Congress standing next to where the actual mosque is located. It is the former Prime Minister of Hamas who is preaching there. I need to see Mona right away so that I may remember the happy times spent with her. There is one final place I have to go, a place where this story began, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. I have an appointment with the woman who helped me get Mona out of Gaza. Her name is also Mona, Mona Al-Shawa.
This time, it's different that you feel that you are totally alone in this world. You keep asking yourself, when the world will not be silent, when the number of the victims became 500, 5,000 maybe? We are counting 2,000, 2,100, 300, 300 women, 500 children, and no one speaks. Everyone saw this tower like in minutes, and no one speak. No one, everyone keeps silent. You feel that you are living in an ugly world, very ugly world, unfair. This is unfair. It's really unfair.
This is my last hope to find someone who believes in humanity and still believes when his eyes gaze over Shijaiya, the district which is undoubtedly the most ruined of all in Gaza. I accompanied Mona and her colleagues. The owner of the building is not far away. He is arguing with an officer of the municipality. Mona and her colleagues are seeking a direct narrative without receiving payment. They are advocates of human rights, hoping that one day Israel will appear before the international courts. He had been hiding out here for 4 days before being able to get to hospital. His brother and both of his nephews are dead. They were shot and killed.
And all the Palestinians here say it's a must. We need that. All of them need accountability and need to see all these people who are criminal to have their punishment. Because again, who can guarantee this is, will not have another damage?
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Ya Rabbana, Ya Rabbana, Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum, La You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a question which is very significant and very pertinent for all of us today, especially a lot of us who are involved, actively involved in, you know, Islamic communities, in centers and in mosques and in these kind of places. And that question is about the reciprocal duties and rights between the imam and the community that that imam leads. And a lot of people ask this question because there's kind of an ambiguity regarding this subject. People kind of are misinformed about this subject. And because of that, you know, a lot of the efforts which are made, in the advancement of the Islamic, message and the Islamic cause, you know, they turn out to be unfruitful. One of the reasons could be this. In respect to this question, we can take reference and inspiration from the hadith, certainly the hadith of Imam Ali. He has a lot of hadith regarding this subject. In one beautiful hadith, the imam, enumerating these rights and these duties, he says, "It is the duty of an imam to rule in accordance with what Allah has revealed, and that he delivers what he has been entrusted with. If he does that, then it is the duty of the people to listen to him and to obey him and to hearken to his call when they are called." So this, in this hadith, the imam says that, you know, if a person has sufficient knowledge of Islam and, you know, he rules according to these laws of Islam and he is trustful and trustworthy and he delivers these trusts that he has been entrusted with and the duties that he has been entrusted with, then it is the obligation and duty of the people to listen to him. And a lot of the problems that we have in, you know, in these communities, a lot of it stems from this fact. So, you know, a lot of, you know, people in, you know, in places, they, you know, they bring a person in, you know, with the idea that this person is going to be the, you know, the imam of this community or whatever. They end up, you know, doing whatever they want. You know, they come up to their own decisions, you know, instead of seeking his advice and looking into inspiration from him with respect to Islamic matters and the propagation of Islam, they run off and, you know, kind of do their own thing. And, we can illustrate the, you know, erroneousness of this matter with a simple example. Let's say that, you know, you go to a doctor, right? And, you know, you do some research and you look for a good doctor who has good expertise in a certain subject. And, you know, you go and you seek his advice out for a certain medical problem. But after the doctor gives the advice, you know, and you spend all this money, you know, going to the doctor and stuff, you decide after that to, you know, to do whatever you want and to come to a decision, a personal decision on your own, even though you don't have, you know, the right qualifications to do so. This would be, if you told any human being that you did such a thing, the person would be astonished, and, you know, he would probably laugh at you. And so the same thing goes, you know, in this case, right? If we have, you know, called a certain person with certain, qualifications, right? With the understanding that this person would be performing a certain function, and we have, you know, spent all these funds and all these, you know, resources and bringing the person there, right? But we end up, you know, following our own, assumptions or our own, come to our own decisions regarding these matters, right? This is something which is humorous and actually astonishing. And, you know, it's contrary to kind of the advice that the Imam alayhi salam gives us here in this hadith. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the reciprocal duties and rights between the Imam and the community in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and in the light of the hadith and the Quranic verses. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we try to answer your queries, your issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. And the answers are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified family. Well, today we have the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member at Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Yes, thank you very much.
Professor Salman Nakavi, we have discussed in the previous episode some of the examples of community service that could be taught to teenagers. Are there some more examples of community service which we can use to encourage our teenagers to be able to actively serve in the community?
Yes, I think that is a very important thing that we need to teach our children about service to others. Nowadays, we have this very beautiful example in the Arba'een Walk that is taking place nowadays as an annual event, one of the biggest coming together of human...
At least it's the second largest gathering after Hajj.
No, it's of course, it's the largest maybe in when it comes to numbers moving all the time. Hajj is a very huge gathering, but it's limited nowadays to maybe a few million, a couple of million people. But here, millions and millions of people start walking.
Arba'een has actually crossed that, yeah.
So in that we see the outpouring of human generosity and care for others. People are sitting on the sides of the path towards Karbala.
In the desert of Karbala,
yes,
we see an ocean of people.
As you said, in scorching heat, they feel proud and honored by serving people who are working towards Imam Hussein.
Right.
And they offer them food, they offer them rest, they offer them, even they massage them, and they clean their shoes. And so many of these things are done without any expectation. Rather, they beseech you, they come to you, and they request you to come and to give them the opportunity to serve you.
So in itself, for the parents who have this capability of visiting, going for ziyarahs and visiting, having a trip of Arba'een, it's very important and encouraging that we come up with our teens for this trip and they themselves see that practically and then actually get encouraged.
Yes, so it is it's a very educational trip. It's apart from its religious aspects, as far as the specific religiosity that is there and the outpouring of love for Imam Hussein and the tawassul that we carry out in that. And it's a show of our human nature. It has many aspects. It has many dimensions. Right. This Arbaeen walk is a
multi-dimensional
thing. It has its political aspects. It has its social aspects. It has its economic aspects. Just like Hajj, right, as you were saying. And so many things, if we want our children to learn and to become strong, this is an experience which makes them gives them this experience of walking for a purpose which is purely for the sake of Imam Hussein and reaching out to Imam Hussein for the sake of gaining proximity to Allah Almighty. So it's a wonderful experience which altogether we have so many facets in it. And one of the most important things that's happening is the Iraqi people, they are coming out. And nowadays, people from all over the world are coming to set up these mokibs and stalls and they're also carrying out this community service. And this is being duplicated and replicated in many places of the world, even if it's not in Karbala. Though, yes, the Karbala walk, the mashy, that has istihbab, that is recommended by Islam and the Shia faith, it is specifically for the walk towards Karbala.
Right. Professor, we'll learn more from you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Naqvi, and we're discussing the importance of community service and how can we encourage our children for community service. Yes, Professor.
So, yes, we were talking about the Arbaeen walk and its implications and its different dimensions. And we are saying that now it is being replicated and duplicated in many places of the world. It's not the actual Arbaeen walk. It's not the one that is being considered to be a mustahab act.
Right.
But still, as we carry out the ta'ziyah, as we carry out for example, any commemoration services for Imam Hussein, this is also in other places of the world it's happening.
Right.
And people are coming out with their generosity also there. They're also giving people food to eat, drinks, and so many other things,
right,
and so many other services. So it's becoming a global feature. So it's becoming a sunnah, which is being, in the general sense, it is becoming a sunnah which is being established in the whole world. So this is how we can train our children and educate our children to become a part of that global movement. Muharram and Safar, we see so many people in India and Pakistan, we see so many stalls for food and drinks have been set up. We call them sabils in India and Pakistan. And there you have even non-Muslims and Muslims from other sects coming out to participate in that in that generosity. They give sharba, they give
the drinks.
Drinks out, even if they're not Muslims, or not Shia Muslims. So this is a very beautiful example of the interaction between different faiths, between human beings, between different sects.
And at the same time, community service.
At the same time, community service. So, and this experience and this learning should continue the whole year. As, for example, in the month of Ramadan, we practice fasting and we practice abstention and abstinence from the various things. The effects of that should continue throughout the year.
Right.
In the same way, when we go for Arba'een or when we go for these activities of a religious nature, but then the lessons that are learned from them should be continued throughout the year. And this community service should become a symbol of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam were so much concerned with the fact that they needed to help people in need.
Right.
And we, unfortunately, again, that is not the only thing they came for to this world, into this world. They had a greater mission. They wanted to emancipate the whole of humanity. But
right.
one aspect was it was the service to mankind, to helping those in need,
right.
helping those who were below
the
poverty line, oppressed. So in every way, they showed us a beautiful example of coming out in the to helping other people, and this is an example. This is something which we should take up as a global activity.
Right.
It shouldn't be so that the United Nations has to carry out work for
some particular mission and then like stop it. Professor, we'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we are with Professor Salman Nakavi discussing the importance of community service, how it could be taught to the teenagers. And Professor, before going to the break, you actually clarified a very important point. Sometimes we encourage our teens to be like, just set up a mawkib in the Arba'een or set up some kind of sabil, same stall, just in the name of Hussein alayhi salam. But you said it should not be limited to that particular period, that particular event. It should be going on throughout the year.
Yes, it should be a lesson that is learned for all of the year round. And especially, I think, what is very much emphasized in Islam is the neighborhood. We know that Islam has emphasized and stressed upon taking care of our neighbors.
Yeah.
And so much stress has been given that the Holy Prophet said that I was given so much recommendations about the neighbors that I thought they would be given a part in a share in the inheritance also.
Right.
So that is the importance. And unfortunately, in this mechanical world of ours, this materialistic world of ours, we don't know what's happening beyond our beyond our walls. The neighbors, we are completely ignorant about their well-being. Of course, the people do mind being, if somebody pokes their nose into their affairs, but that is not the case. We should be living, we should have a society, a community, a neighborhood where people know each other and they interact with each other and they know the problems that are being faced by each other. So there are so many people, white-collared people, they can't even express their needs. There are people who are in need. They maintain their dignity. People who don't have that, they don't face that problem. They don't face that issue. They come out in the open and beg, and ask others for help.
Right.
But they are people who are in need and really in need, and they are really facing difficulties. But they can't. They feel ashamed of expressing their needs.
Right.
That is the target that we should be trying to achieve. That our children. Realize who is really in need.
Right.
Of course, those who come out to beg and to ask, they should be given also. They should not be, turned off, turned away.
Right.
We shouldn't shout at them. We shouldn't tell them off. That is also not proper. وَمَسَائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرْ If somebody asks you for some help, you shouldn't turn him off. You shouldn't turn him away. You shouldn't, scold him. Yes,
right.
Help him to him. But those people who are really mahroom, those who are really in need, our society should be such that even if the elders can't, the children at least when they play in the neighborhood with the other children, with the other children of the neighborhood, they find out the difficulties and they can come back and relate them to their parents, and then they can get together to solve those problems.
Right.
So, I mean, people, they are lady, girls who are, they need to, they are in need of weddings. They don't have enough money for their dowries.
Carry out, yeah.
So people should be helping them with the dowries, with the, you know, in getting
any kind of assistance.
Getting good-natured people together, acquainted with each other, bringing them into a family, into a husband and wife relationship, giving them the proper advice, and then setting up the family. That is all wonderful things that need to be done by our society, and especially this should start from the youth. And it shouldn't be left off for a certain people, a group of people who maybe are well-off and well-to-do, and they can do it. No, everyone should get involved and get participate in it.
Right, exactly. As Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family, said, whoever helps ease the burden of a Muslim in this world, Allah will ease his burden on the Day of Judgment. May Allah help us to be that generous, to be that helping, and also encourage our teens for these generous acts of community service. Thank you so much, Professor, for that beautiful discussion. Thank you so much, our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, August 6, 2023. I'm Atefa Irfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners from every corner of the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. This is another edition of Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world, from Shatrudhan Sharma from India, from Kari Virtanen from Finland, and from Gattano Taranova from Italy. So, Shatrudhan, Kari, and Gattano, thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special program. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and this program. And let me see who has sent us email or message from around the world. Yes, Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us a piece of email. From Italy, we've received an email from Gattano Taranova From Finland, Kari Virtanen has sent us a piece of email. Again from India, Dr. D. Sarkar, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. And the last but not the least is an email from the US from Bill McDavid. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you with these great emails. Welcome back. As I said, Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us a piece of email. Najmuddin says, "Dear friends, Assalamu alaikum. The day of Ashura is the day of remembering victory of truth over falsehood, repentance and doing good deeds. Thank you for your informative programs for this occasion and the special discussion on Ashura. Kindly send me new program and frequency schedule, printed QSL card with IRIB souvenirs. Also, if possible, please send me a book on the life of Imam Khomeini. Thank you." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Najmuddin from India, and thank you very much for letting us know your views about our special features on the day of Ashura, which, you know, is the 10th of Muharram, when Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions were martyred on this day. I want you to know that we always value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, and especially listeners, a special program. Thank you for letting us know your views about our programs. So please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Before we could be able to send you, you know, the frequency schedule and program guide and printed QSL. So thank you for this email, Najmuddin from India. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from Italy, Gattano Tranova has sent us a piece of email. Gattano says, "Dear staff, I heard your transmission in various days of this month. I understood words from the Holy Quran and some news. I heard you from central Italy city of Lucca. I would be very proud to receive your QSL and a detailed list of frequencies and programs. Thank you very much and God bless you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Gattano Tranova from Italy, or as you say, ciao. We are so appreciative for this email, Gattano, sincerely. So you've heard programs which contain holy verses of the Noble Quran, and you were able to understand the words. It's great. Gattano Tranova, congratulations. So keep up the good work and tell us your views about our programs, different programs of IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best, Gattano Tranova from Italy. And of course, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. And after a short break, I will be back with you. See what our regular listener from India says. We have an email from Dr. D. Sarkar from India. He says, "I am a radio listener from India. I listen to your radio broadcast. I'm sending herewith an audio file of your radio program. Kindly acknowledge this letter and verify my reception. I shall be obliged if you please send me a QSL card. Also, if possible, please send me your program schedule, pennants, and stickers." First of all, salam and greetings to you. And thank you very much for this email, Dr. D. K. Sarkar from India. We received the audio file of our programs. You listen to. Appreciations to you for that. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as confirmation to this letter. And Bill McDavid from the US has sent us an email. He says, "Dear producer, I heard your broadcast and especially enjoyed the listener's special program. You are heard very well here in Florida, USA. I would very much appreciate a QSL card from your station if possible. Also, can you please email me the English service schedule for IRIP? Thank you. Salam from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Bill McDavid from the US. And appreciations to you for this email and also for your comments about our broadcast. It's really good to know that you enjoyed the listeners' special program, and it makes us happy that the signals of IRIP English Radio are very well heard in Florida, the US. Thank you for everything. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you. And Bill McDavid from the US, in order to find the frequency schedule and the program's schedule and the guide, you can refer to our website at parstoday.ir/en, and there you can find the materials. And also please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back from Finland. Kari Virtanen has sent us a piece of email. Kari says, "Peace and God's blessings be upon you. Here is the fourth reception report and recording from northern Finland. As explained in previous emails, it took me nearly a day to reach the listening base and then a whole week of intense listening to make sure I captured as many news stations as possible. I was really happy to be able to capture so many of IRIB regional stations here. I'm afraid this time there are many reports for you, and I really appreciate if you can take the time to verify these. Your kind verification, QSL or EQSL, would be highly appreciated for these stations and frequencies. As there are so many of them, I would be perfectly happy if you do it with a reply by email. Once again, thank you for taking the time and hope you and your family are well. Salam to you, Kari Virtanen from Finland, and warm greetings to you and your fellow country men and women. I do thank you for writing such a detailed email to IRIB English Radio and to your favorite program, Listeners Special. We are glad to know that the signals of IRIB English Radio are well received in Finland, in northern Finland, where you live. That's great. So please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Kari Virtanen from Finland." Oh, we had a great time being together, but anyway, we have to say goodbye. But before we wrap up the program, I do send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, from every corner of the world, including Shatrudan Sharma from India, Kari Virtanen from Finland, Gatano Terranova from Italy, Najmuddin from India, Dr. D.K. Sarkar from India, and Bill McDavid from the US. Please keep in touch with us, with IRIB English Radio and with Listeners, a special program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to